The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Science Extra from The Guardian. This is the full interview with Marcus Chown, author of Quantum Physics Can't Hurt You. Marcus is a former radio astronomer at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena and now cosmology consultant at New Scientist. Marcus, thank you very much for coming in. Quantum physics can't hurt you. Who thought it can hurt you? People, is it as a mental hurt, is it?
Absolutely. I mean, it's got this aura. Quantum theory is our description of the microscopic world of atoms, so the constituents of you and me and everybody. And it's been fantastically productive. You know, it's given us computers and lasers and nuclear reactors and iPod nanos, and it tells us why this table here is solid, why the sun shines. But it also, apart from being, I think it was something like 70% of the GDP of America is apparently based on inventions which are based on quantum theory. But besides being enormously practical, a recipe for building things, it gives us an insight into an incredible Alice in Wonderland world, which underpins the everyday world, a world where an atom can be in two places at once, you know, where atoms on different sides of the universe can communicate with each other instantaneously, where things happen for no reason at all. My idea in writing this book was really to you know, there's this fantastic development that made the everyday world, and it's completely bypassed the everyday person in the street, and they're fearful of it. And I wanted to tell them that really there's no reason to be fearful, and this can be understood by anybody.
They're fearful, I think, because it's so weird. I mean, quantum mechanics just has it's intuitively strange. It makes no sense.
That's the excitement. Can they say if you think you understand it, you don't?
Yeah, well, that's the...
Well, these statements which are made by physicists, and I do think that even Richard Feynman made statements like that, are really doing the public a disservice. You know, I mean, you know, they're trying to say, we're the experts, we're the priesthood, we understand it, it's beyond you. This is complete rubbish.
Okay, in your slim volume then, by the way, which is slimmer than Ben's book, so, you know, quantum physics explained in half the time that Ben takes.
Less than 200 pages.
Evidence-based medicine. But tell us, you mentioned just now the certain proportion of the world's GDP is based on quantum physics. Just go rattle through some examples for us of the kinds of things that quantum physics has done for us, to quote Monty Python.
Well, absolutely everything. As I mentioned, things like lasers, computers, nuclear reactors, none of these things would be possible without an understanding of quantum theory. You know, and it does come down to, you know, the solidity of matter, you know, the ground that you stand on, the reason that the sun shines. Absolutely everything is explained by quantum. So there's this fantastic theory which has been devised, which is probably the most successful in the history of the human race, and yet the average person in the street is completely bypassed them. So this is an attempt by me to get people up to speed, you know, quite quickly. Half the book is actually about relativity, the other development in the last 100 years.
Well, I was going to say that not only have you managed to talk about quantum physics in this book, but in the other 100 pages, it's about the other very hard physics bit thing, relativity. We'll come back to relativity in a minute, but Pod, any quick questions on quantum mechanics that you need answering?
Well, you managed to explain it in less than 200 pages. I was wondering, can you give us a précis in a couple of sentences?
Well, I mean, I always think to myself, these ideas have been accreted over a long period of time, like a patchwork. And nobody's gone back and thought, well, you know, if you wanted to explain quantum theory or relativity to anyone, you know, what is the one thing that you need to actually tell people from which everything else follows? You know, with relativity, it's simply that a light ray is uncatchable. Absolutely everything follows from that, you know, the fact that actually time and intervals of time and intervals of space are not the same for everyone. You know, time is kind of stretchy and so is space, you know. So in other words, if you travel near the speed of light, you shrink in the direction of motion like a pancake. Your time slows down. With quantum theory, the one thing from which most of it follows is simply that the building blocks of matter, atoms or whatever, are simultaneously localized particles like billiard balls and spread out waves like waves on a pond. Now that is virtually impossible to get your head around, but it's because they have these two almost contradictory aspects that leads to all the other phenomena. And one of the things that is so amazing about quantum theory, why should you be interested? Not only does it explain the everyday world, But it really does tell us about this world, which is far stranger than science fiction. I once interviewed the American astronomer Carl Sagan, and he'd written a science fiction novel, Contact. You know, it was made into a film with Jodie Foster. And he also did science. And I said, you know, why do you do science rather than science fiction? And he said, because science is stranger than science fiction. And when you learn about quantum theory, when you learn that an atom can actually be in two places at once, the equivalent of you being in London and New York at the same time, you know, you just can't get your head around it. Did you know that an electron is not the same electron if it's rotated once through 360 degrees? You have to rotate it through 720 degrees, two turns, before it's the same electron.
What do you mean by not the same electron?
It doesn't behave as the same electron. So you know, it will actually behave in two separate ways.
And what do you mean by behave in two separate ways?
Well, this actual property leads to the Pauli exclusion principle, which is actually the reason that we're here. I mean, the reason that there are 92 atoms, types of atoms, you know, from hydrogen the lightest to uranium the heaviest, is, and not one type of atom, is because of the Pauli exclusion principle. And that means, what it says in a nutshell is that electrons cannot pile up together. They're very, very antisocial. So, you know, when you find them in atoms, as you add more and more electrons to get more and more complex atoms, they have to take separate orbits. You know, they can't all pile in the same orbit. If they piled in the same orbit, there'd only be one type of atom. But the, I mean, this is too much for me to actually answer at the moment, but that property of electrons being, you know, having to go through two turns before they're the same, is connected to that. And some of the greatest physicists, including Richard Feynman, Steven Weinberg, have tried as hard as they possibly can to explain how that leads to the Pauli exclusion principle. And I don't do it in this book, but I do it in my next book, and I'm still in the process of trying to get my head around it.
So, as far as I understand from my physics lectures more than a decade ago now, the idea of spin, which is what you're talking about, yeah, the electron going around in two, simply is one of the properties like charge or its velocity or that kind of thing, which is that the electron itself is just behaving in a different way. Two electrons with the same spin can't occupy the same space.
That's right.
And they have to have different spaces, which is why atoms have orbital shells and so on. Yeah. I'm really glad that made no sense.
The interesting thing about spin and all these other aspects and what makes the quantum world so amazing is they have no analogue in the everyday world. This is why we have problems with language. I mean, an atom is neither a localized particle or a wave. You know, it's something for which we have no word and we have no picture in our language.
So you've got no word, no picture when you end up with waves and billiard balls. Do you in your head have a way of thinking about it that makes you able to visualize them as both those things?
I don't. And it is impossible. It's rather like if we lived in a two-dimensional world, you know, this tabletop, trying to imagine three-dimensional things. All we can ever see is shadows of the three-dimensional things. And it's as if there is some entity, maybe call it a wavicle or something, and we only ever see a wave-like shadow or a particle-like shadow. That's very, very similar to relativity. There is a four-dimensional thing called space-time. It's a seamless entity which we cannot experience directly, but we can see shadows of it. And one shadow of it is time, and the other shadow of it is space. So, you know, we see space and time stretching, but in fact this entity, space-time, is unchanging, you know. And it's just that then you see the genius of someone like Einstein to have realised that things are simple in four dimensions, and only in the shadow world of three dimensions is it very complicated.
So does that mean that potentially in this, in the more complicated worlds of space-time and 11 dimensions, if you believe strings and so on, that the three-dimensional forms that we see all around us have a much more complicated version? Or is that sort of a slightly misinterpreted?
Absolutely the opposite. I mean, when we go to higher dimensions, and remember, Einstein's genius was to realise that you know, there is this entity called four-dimensional space-time, you know. There is no force of gravity between the Earth and the Sun. You know, it isn't that there is some force which is reaching out and grabbing the Earth and keeping it. What's happening is that the four-dimensional space-time around the Sun is warped into kind of a valley in four-dimensional space. We cannot see that valley, but the Earth is rolling around the rim of that valley like a roulette ball. you know, round a roulette wheel. But it took the genius of someone like Einstein to realise this. And in the four dimensions, everything is simple. But in the you know, in our world, it looks very, very complicated. We're constantly looking for what we call unifications. You know, the Large Hadron Collider, you know, this, the biggest scientific experiment ever done, is going to become operational fairly soon in Geneva. And when particles are smashed together at very high energies, we see that the four fundamental, or certainly three of the fundamental forces in nature, are in fact separate strands of a single kind of superforce. You know, so things get simpler. You know, we're constantly looking for the simpler picture. You may think that extra dimensions make things more complicated, but in fact, in some respects, they make things simpler.
I reckon mathematically they make everything much more complicated. but so the Large Hadron Collider you mentioned, actually, it's going to switch on in just under 2 weeks now. You know, we'll be reporting on that as and when. But
well,
what's exciting...
If we don't all die.
If we
don't...
But then the guys who are suing the Large Hadron Collider will get loads of money.
Well, they will. The money will mean...
Why are we going to die?
Money will mean nothing.
There's a bunch of conspiracy theorists who are trying to protest against them doing it.
Let's not worry about the black hole problem. We've tackled
this
before.
What I would say is that there are particles coming through, you know, the atmosphere, you know, coming even often coming through this room, which are, you know, a million times more energetic than anything that we will be able to create. And they're involved in collisions in the upper atmosphere. And if they were going, if anything was going to be triggered,
seriously, man, be careful what you say, because you can really freak people out.
I think one.
So we know, you know.
I think one just hit Ben in the head just now. But I was going to say, with the Large Hadron Collider, we're going to get to energies which we've never reached before on Earth, in very small amounts, admittedly. What that's going towards, though, is tackling this massive problem that sort of sits in the middle of physics like a big white elephant, which is that relativity theory, very, very successful, genius. Einstein came up with it. Quantum physics people came up with it over 20 or 30 years, the beginning of the 20th century as well. Obviously, you said it's very successful. They don't agree with each other. What are we going to do about it? Do you have a crack at tackling that in the book?
Well, essentially, as you say, quantum theory is a theory of the very small, you know, of atoms and their constituents. Einstein's theory of general relativity is the theory of gravity, and gravity only is such a weak force that it's only significant when you get really big masses. So it's a theory of the very big. And so at the moment, we the domains of the very small and very big don't overlap. But we do know that the universe emerged from, you know, a very compressed state, the Big Bang, when it was the whole universe, a big thing, was very small. So we do need to unite those two theories if we ever want to understand the origin of the universe. The Large Hadron Collider is not going to get anywhere near the energies, you know, by some fantastic factor to tell us anything about what you're talking about, which is quantum gravity. That's the holy grail. We're always talking about holy grails, but it's really the holy grail for physics, really.
That's it.
We're not going to get there. No one really knows how to do this. You know, the energy is available to try and figure out. All we can do is the energies at which gravity was quantum, those two theories were unified, they occurred in the Big Bang. So it is possible that we still live, you know, we live in a universe that arose from the Big Bang, that there might be some fossil imprint in the universe, for instance, in the distribution of galaxies or something like that. That's our only hope of discovering something really experimentally about quantum gravity. The Large Hadron Collider falls far short of being able to do that.
But it's still very exciting. And listen in a couple of weeks for all that stuff. Look, at the risk of splitting everyone's heads with this stuff, we'll stop that there for now. Marcus, thanks very much.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.